right, first things first. Homework is due from last week, so if you have it, I need it brought up to the front. Yes, sir. No. All you have to do is answer the questions. The format was kind of up to you. All right, so let's talk about what you guys found. Remember that you need to, I know, horrible sacrifice, watch TV and listen to the radio. And you guys had a good week to do it because of the big game that was happening on Sunday. Go Giants. So, what happened?
Excellent.
So let's talk about what was there. Did anybody see or hear a promotion that they thought was really particularly creative or interesting, or something that you heard about and thought, I want to do that? You did? What'd you get?
On 95.5, they were doing a Live Like Rihanna weekend.
Okay.
Where a person wins, and them and three guests get to fly to London. And first class accommodations for hotels, everything to pay for, and they get to go to all of Rihanna's favorite restaurants, shopping places, and sites, all credit, everything to pay for.
Wow.
And then they get to go to the music festival that Rihanna's performing in and get VIP passes.
Sure, backstage passes, all that good stuff. Right. Very cool.
Yeah.
Sounds interesting. And that, my next question is, what do you have to do? What did you have to do to take part in that?
You have to call the radio station. You have to kind of like stay tuned in, because I think it's hot. I think it's like every 35 minutes, every hour and a half, they declare like a winner. It's from like 8:05 a.m. to like 8:05 p.m.
Okay, got it.
So, yeah,
all
you
right.
have to call in, and I think it's like 20 minutes. I don't know. I forgot what that said, but you know.
Well, the number doesn't matter. That
yeah,
might change.
Yeah. So they announce who got the.
Right.
You know, it qualifies.
Gotcha. Okay. Very cool. All right. Now, you have one too?
Sorry. I had one, but I.
Oh, okay. All right. Did anybody have a promotion that they thought, I can't believe someone actually thought this was a good idea? Were there any that were just absolute dogs? There's one over there.
Well, okay. I'm not sure if it's a dog. I heard it yesterday on AM 950 WWJ.
Okay.
It is a promotion being promoted by Ozzy Osbourne for a free trip to New York to get a colonoscopy.
Oh, yeah.
All right. My mind is reeling because you used the words WWJ and Ozzy Osbourne in the same sentence.
Exactly.
Okay. Whatever. Interesting, at least, if not a little bit of a head scratcher, for sure. Because
well, this is being
exactly
promoted not only on the radio, it's on their website, but it's an organization. They're calling themselves CBS Cares.
Uh huh. Okay.
And I guess Ozzy had his wife had cancer, so
she
he's
did.
Got a. He's got an interest in that.
Sure.
But it's the promotion comes on with this lady going, Ozzy, do you have a real fantasy? And he says, of course I do. I want to go to New York and have a colonoscopy.
All right, that is a little bit of a head scratcher, yes. I don't know that would be the way I would want to promote my cause. As worthy as that might be. What else? There was another really bad one over here.
I was about to say the exact.
Really? Okay. All right. Now, so let me ask you, what did you think about it? Why? I mean, other than the fact that
I wasn't sure if it was real or not.
Okay.
Same here.
Right.
Because they're talking about like brought to New York, have a nice, relaxing, comfortable colonoscopy.
No pressure. Everybody's cool. Little aroma therapy going on. Okay.
Have a good time.
Right. All right. So, just from that one little sample. Of these two very different promotions, right? You got an idea of the kinds of things that could happen out there in the marketplace, out there in the space of ideas. And one of the things we're going to talk about today, and one of the things you guys are going to do a little bit later, is you're actually going to plan a promotion of your own. Before we start that, though, I want to go over a couple things that we talked about last week and actually touch on some new things. We talked last week in very, very broad terms about what a promotion is and what the goal of every promotion is. Remember, there's a difference between a definition and a goal. The definition of a promotion is, straight out of last week's notes, the act of increasing awareness of something, anything, even colonoscopies, by drawing attention to it. And how you do that is what makes the promotion stand out. In this case, you use Ozzy or Rihanna as your sort of celebrity hook and get everybody interested, because who doesn't want to live like Rihanna, right? I would, you know. I would not mind living in London and living the high life for a little while. That would be pretty cool. But the goal of every promotion is always to increase ratings and revenue. And the key can be found in one of the questions that was in your homework: what do you have to do to get involved in the promotion itself? And for the most part, it has something to do with increasing listenership, with getting you to listen more often than you already do. And like you said, with the Rihanna contest, you have to listen to be called. You have to listen for the event to be caller 20, and then they do one of those every hour, and so it might be, you know, it might be time to call. So you kind of have to keep listening, right? And the goal of that is, the more you listen, the more not only will you hopefully enjoy our programming, but the more you'll also, by osmosis or sort of by association, pick up more of the advertising, because you're probably going to listen through the stop set, because you don't want to miss the song of the day, right? And that's kind of the deal. So every contest is designed in some way, or every promotion is designed in some way to try and increase ratings and revenue that way. So you always want to keep that in mind when you're planning, okay, what are we going to have people do? Whether it be, you know, jump through flaming hoops or kick a field goal or whatever it might be. That's what you want at the back of your mind, is how does this increase our ratings? How does this help our clients get more money? Because those are the two things you need to talk about. Now, speaking of money, one of the things we talked about last week was a very, very simple concept. It sounds simple, it sounds easy, but it's a little more complicated than you think. And I want to talk for the first part of today about ratings. Ratings is a term that kind of gets thrown around a lot in the business. How are the ratings? Oh, pretty good. Well, they got canceled because their ratings must have sucked. Right? We tend to think of it in very, very simple sort of broad terms. But it really is, there's a lot more to it than that. The simple formula I gave you last week is more ratings equals, anybody remember?
More revenue.
There you go. More ratings equals more money. Simple as that. And on a very basic level, it really is that simple. More ratings equals more money. And the reason for that is pretty logical. We gather data, we figure out who listens to what, and then we let the math do the work. If more people listen to Station X, Station X can charge more for their ads because those ads reach more people. Right? Simple economics, simple mathematics. Not even close to simple. Okay? The formula itself is very simple, right? You figure if more people do something, then it must be worth more, therefore I can charge more. Oddly, in a retail sense, it works backwards. Theoretically, if more people buy something, it gets cheaper over time, but that's another story. So that's the basic premise is this: more ratings equals more money, because my ads are reaching more people, so I can charge more. But have you ever actually stopped to think where those numbers come from? Does anybody know offhand?
Yeah.
Yeah, how does that happen? Right. What?
Company called Nielsen.
That, you know what? That's one of them. Absolutely. Very good. How many of you guys have probably heard of the Nielsen Company? Yeah, you've heard that name thrown around a little bit talking about ratings? There's actually two companies that handle ratings for the broadcast industry. One of them does it for radio, the other one does it for TV.
Arbitron?
Yep. On the radio side of things, the company in question is called Arbitron. Sounds like a transformer. Yes, it does. Absolutely. Arbitron for radio. For TV, it's our friends over at the Nielsen Company. Yes, sir. Over at the Nielsen Company. They do the TV thing. I want to talk about Nielsen first because their way of doing business is actually fairly simple. And I'm also going to switch to a better color. The Nielsen folks take care of TV ratings, and they have for almost 40 years now. Long, long time. And really, there is one major way that the Nielsen folks get their information, and that is electronically. What the Nielsen folks do is first... I think I spelled that wrong, but oh well. Electronically. I know I spelled it wrong. It's not important right now. Is it right? Mm-hmm. Go me. Okay. The Nielsen folks get their information electronically. But where does that information actually come from? Has anybody ever taken part in a Nielsen survey? Yep. You did? When was that?
It was a while back. I don't think it was a survey. It was like they came to our house and they asked you like to sign up for something. They gave us a little box.
You bet. Absolutely. That's it. That's the textbook right there. Now, what happened before they brought that box into your house was that if you're not over 18, then it was probably your parents or whoever you live with, right? And you have to answer some questions. Because they want to make sure when they bring, before they bring one of those boxes into your house, they want to make sure that they're getting what's called a representative sample. They want to try and get as many different points of information from as many different people over a given area as they possibly can. For example, they wouldn't just go to Downriver. They wouldn't just go to Oakland County. They wouldn't just go to Lansing. Right? They try to get all over the state so they get as many people involved in the survey as they possibly can. Because the reality here is that they use these ratings are the currency that we use in our industry to decide not only who watches what and how much we can charge for ads, but also in a very real sense, what stays on the air. You know, ratings do matter. If you've ever thought that it doesn't matter because you know these people just keep on the shows that they like, I know sometimes it feels that way because like your favorite show gets canceled right away and you're like, oh man, it's just the way it is. But before the Nielsen people can come to your house, they answer you. They ask you a couple of questions, and the first question they ask is, do you or any member of your household work for a media outlet, meaning a radio or TV station, in your market? And if the answer is yes, they say, thank you very much, have a nice day. And they cut you out of the survey entirely. And the reason for that is because they don't want a conflict of interest. For example, if I work over at CBS Radio, if I work for 97.1, right, that's part of CBS, the great big giant corporation, including CBS TV, and all the cable stations that they own and all that stuff, right? And it's even worse because CBS is part of Viacom, which is just a giant empire. And there's an inherent conflict of interest there, right? If I work for CBS, even if it's on the radio side, well, it's still the same company. So I have sort of a vested personal interest in making sure that CBS programs do well, because if CBS as a whole does well, I do better. So naturally, I'm going to go watch CBS programming, right? Or at least maybe I'm going to tell them that I do. That's a different story. But so they have to make sure, first off, that you don't work for a media organization so that you don't sort of contaminate the results. And then they have to make sure that you fit the right demographic, or they go, because they don't want too many men or too many women in the study, or too many people above or below a certain age. Like I said, they want to try and spread things out as much as they can, so that on average the numbers work out to be more or less correct, right? Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. It's just, again, I hate to bother you with math this early in the morning, but it is basic statistics. So then what happens is exactly what you said. Assuming that you kind of jump through those hoops and you pass all the little benchmarks that they have, then they bring this box into your house and they set it up, then they plug it into the TV stream. So it acts just the way like your satellite dish or your cable box or whatever you have does. And that little box keeps track of what you watch, when you watch it, and how many people are watching with you. Now, before you get too freaked out and think, oh, they're spying on me, you're doing this voluntarily, right? You sign up for it, and they even pay you a little bit. It's not very much. It's like $50 or $60. It's enough to be worth your while. Okay? So you do get compensated for your time. Don't go out and buy a boat or anything, but you know you do get paid for what you do, and they gather the information with your knowledge. Okay, so don't think it's like my TV is spying on me, not yet. So the Nielsen people gather this information, and then they process it and they break it down, and there's a bunch of different ways that information can get broken down, and we'll talk about those different ways in a second. So that's on the TV side, and like I say, for the most part, TV ratings have been gathered that way for a long, long time. And technology has made it possible so that now, with the different chips and things that are inside those set-top boxes, if I pay for the service, if I pay for the privilege, I can get ratings in almost real time. In fact, in a big market like Detroit, I can get what are called overnights. Let's say, for example, that I work at WWJ, right? Channel 62, the CBS affiliate, to keep picking on CBS. I work for the CBS affiliate downtown. If I'm their programmer, I want to know, how did NCIS do last night, right? Or if I'm over at Fox, how did Alcatraz do on Monday? I want to know how my numbers are. I can get those numbers in under 24 hours. They call them overnights. So the show was on Monday. On Tuesday morning, I can log in and check those numbers because all that data has been collated, right, with the giant computers that Nielsen has at their disposal. And so I can see in very, very quick time now how well my show did. That's one of the reasons why a show that you might like a lot gets canceled after 3 or 4 weeks. Because the numbers just aren't there. Somebody has decided, a programmer has decided, that you know what, this show just isn't performing. Right? So I hope y'all didn't like Pan Am because it was gone, like, you know, three weeks after it started. Or there's a couple of, every fall, there's a bunch of shows that just go, nope, sorry, 4 weeks is all you get. But the reason for that is because you can look at these numbers so fast and somebody has to make a decision. And sometimes there can be grassroots, fan support, and they'll say, you know, bring back X, or somebody in programming says, no, this show just didn't have a chance, or we didn't find the right time slot for this show. That's why sometimes things get moved around, because they think, okay, well, you did horrible on Monday night, maybe you'll do better on Thursday, maybe you'll do better on Friday, right? What's on your mind?
Now, say a show gets canceled, now if people go out, buy that season of the show on the DVD, does that increase ratings?
That's a different question entirely. DVD sales are what we call back-end, right? Front-end is watching in real time. And by the way, they finally started to wise up and include DVRs in ratings because they recognize that viewing habits have changed. 2 or 3 years ago, they wouldn't do this. But they've started to recognize that people watch TV differently now than they used to. I mean, back in my day, you were lucky if you could program the VCR and maybe watch something later that night. Okay? Now with DVR, the fact that DVR just finds everything for you and says, oh, please, you know, anything with Kim Kardashian in it, I'll watch whatever it is. Just an example. No judging, please. But the fact is, it's really easy. You can say, I want to watch anything I want to watch anything that has Micro in it. I want to watch anything, I want to watch everything on Fox on Sunday night. You can just say, you know, record the whole day for me, right? Or tape every episode of South Park that's on for the next seven years, right? You can just tell your DVR to find that stuff, and it will. And DVRs now get counted in ratings. In what's called the late time. They count up to two or three days after the initial airing. So if a show's on, say, on Monday, if you watch it by Wednesday, it counts. And the reason for that is because the providers, the outlets, have contracted with your DVR company, with your company that you got your DVR from, whether it be Comcast or AT&T or whoever, and they've said, can we please have access to this data? We don't want subscriber info. We just want to know what everybody's watching. You know, they don't put the data to the name. Like, they don't find out that it's you. But they find out, of the people in Metro Detroit who have Comcast, X number of them were watching CSI on Thursday night. Right? What's up?
I sort of have two questions.
Okay.
How long do you have to be, like, watching the program for it to be considered, like, a rating? Like, you know, it's
right.
Like you flip through, like, a commercial. And
that's a great question. Usually the threshold is between 2 to 5 minutes. After you've been watching for 5 minutes, it gets counted.
Okay.
So that way, if you're flipping around, it doesn't go, oh, you watch this, then you watch this, then you watch this, then you watch this. Now, they can see that. They can see the channel flip. And so maybe you go back to something, oh, no, I'll go back over here. And then eventually you settle on, oh, Gilligan's Island reruns are on, I'll watch those. Right? Or whatever. But usually, yes, there is a threshold, and it's about 5 minutes before the clock starts to tick.
And I have another question.
Uh-huh.
Like, you brought up the whole DVR thing. I watch, like, General Hospital.
Sure.
And
God bless the soaps on ABC. There's, like, three soap operas left, and General Hospital is one of them.
They all got canceled, but with that one. But, like, you know, like, I read, like, you know, like, message boards of, and they say, like, you know, keep the ratings for General Hospital going. We don't want it to be, like, one of the ones that get canceled.
Right.
And they say, like, if you DVR it, don't fast forward through commercials.
Right.
As it affects ratings. How does that...
Well, the fast forwarding, here's the thing about fast forwarding through commercials. People freak out about, I'm sorry, not people, programmers. Programmers freak out about advertising on DVR. They're like, oh my God, no, they're fast forwarding through our commercials and we're losing all this money, it's never going to work. I watch almost exclusively DVR programming now. I very rarely watch anything in real time. Unless it's like a sporting event or something, and I have to watch it in real time because I don't want to get the surprise blown later in the day, right? The commercials still work. All right, that's I think what's interesting is that I don't think advertisers are figuring that out. And if it's a good commercial, I'll stop and check it out. So it's not that we're ignoring commercials; it's that we're ignoring bad commercials, which frankly I think is fine. I'm speaking as somebody who used to make commercials for a living. And the answer to your question is they do want you to sit through the whole program because then they can say to the programmers, they can say to the folks at ABC, this show is still a good investment because we still watch the ads. And that's why, remember we talked about product placement last week?
Yeah.
That's why product placement is starting to shift into vogue, because that way you can have a commercial for Pepsi without actually breaking to a commercial for Pepsi. You know, if I'm watching General Hospital and Lucky gets thirsty and he goes to the fridge and he's like, I need me a Coke, and he pulls out a Coke, then okay, I've just made a commercial, small and subtle though it is.
Yeah.
I've just done a commercial for Coke. And you'll see that happen more and more, because it's just smart business for the production company, because they get a little money from the Coke folks, and it's smart for Coke because your product is there. And if I want to watch the show, I can't ignore the fact that this character is drinking an actual product that I could go out and buy. In some ways, it's much more effective than just having a commercial that I've been conditioned to ignore. Right? What do you think?
Now, you were talking about reruns. So, like, if enough people decided to go watch reruns on the Sarah Connor Chronicles, would that come back?
Right. Now, your original question was about DVD sales. Let's talk about the back end. And I may go off on a rant here because we're about to talk about one of my favorite things ever. How many people have heard of a TV show called Firefly?
Oh, my God, yes.
I have brown coats in my room?
Yes.
I love you. All right.
I love that.
Here's for those of you who don't know, the reason I bring this up is because whether you like the show or not, it's amazing because of what happened because of this show. Firefly, for those of you who don't know, is this little show that came out on Fox, lasted for all of 13 episodes, only 10 of which were ever actually broadcast on TV. And because it was on Friday nights, it continually got interrupted for baseball and all kinds of stuff. The show was like never on. Okay, but for the 6 or 7 people who watched it and saw it and said, oh my God, I love this show. First off, it was from Joss Whedon, the same guy who did Buffy and Angel. So if you dug those shows, you're like, ooh, I should give this a shot, right? So there's kind of that built-in fan base.
Astonishing X-Men.
And, right. And so if you're already predisposed to be a bit of a geek, you're like, ooh, this is a cool show. And so what happened was, there was this tiny little cadre, tiny being relative because it was still thousands of people, but thousands of people in little tiny pockets all over the country said, this is the best show ever. And what they did was they ripped DVD copies, bootleg DVD copies, and said, well, because A, you can't ever find this show, and B, hardly anybody knows it's actually on, I'm just going to rip a bunch of copies of my own DVDs and send them out to people who I think will like them. And it worked. And so then it's kind of like Star Trek way back in the day. Then now there's this grassroots fan base of people who just love this show. And I'll confess that I am one of them.
Serenity came out.
There's a Serenity on my keychain right now. So the word got out virally. And we're viral marketing, something we're going to talk about a little later. But the word got out that this amazing show is on. But before anybody could actually find it, it got canceled. It got canceled after like 10 weeks. So even if you found it, either it wasn't on when it was supposed to be, or it was canceled before you found out what was going on. So these bootleg DVDs continue to be circulated and continue to be circulated and continue to be circulated. And eventually Fox figures out, hey, we've got this property that we own the rights to. You want to see if we can make any money off the DVDs? Yeah, I guess. And that's usually what happens, like, in between seasons of a show. They'll do what's called the back end, which is selling DVDs of a complete season. And NBC has made real hay out of this with, like, The Office and Parks and Rec and 30 Rock, you know. And so in between seasons, you go and you buy the season that you just watched, but you have it on DVD, and those sales go directly to the production company. So NBC makes money off of that, right? And so in this case, Fox is like, well, we want to make a little bit of our money back. We'll put out a DVD set. Things sold like crazy because people like me and people like other brown coats in the room went out and bought, not one, not two, not three, but in some cases four and five sets. Not to keep for themselves, although I do have two in my house, one to keep and one to loan out. But also they were buying them for their friends and saying, you need to see this. You are my friend. You will like this show. I have bought it for you. You're welcome. And so Fox makes all this money on the DVDs, and they're like, the hell? What? What is going on? Nobody watched this show. Why is everybody buying it now? And so they were suddenly scrambling, going, wait a minute, this makes us money. This is awesome. Well, unfortunately, when the show was in production, they had kind of treated the production, the producer, Joss Whedon, a little bit shabbily. They had, you know, made all kinds of demands on the show and said, do this, do that, do this, do that. And he said, hey, Fox, get bent. Y'all can go away. I'm going to keep my show, I'm going to keep my characters, and I get to do whatever I want with them later. That was in his contract. And so Fox says, whoa, come back. And he says, uh-uh. Not going to happen. You had your chance. You can keep your money for the DVDs. Well, then something amazing happens. Universal, entirely different media company, okay? The other side of town. So the Sony folks over at Universal go, hey, Joss, come here. Yeah? Listen, you had this amazing show that everybody loves. Yes. Do you think if you put out more stuff, people would watch it? Yes. Of course I do. Okay. How about we make a movie? I'm sorry, you want to do what? We'd like to make a movie. You want to make a movie out of a show that didn't even last 10 weeks, that had no ratings at all, and it's all just word of mouth. You want to make a movie of this? Yeah. Okay, I'm in. And so suddenly you have a major studio doing a movie of a TV show that nobody saw, unless you did see it, and then odds are you watched it, and you watched it again, and you watched it again, and you watched it again. And I want to emphasize to you again that that does not happen, okay? You don't make a movie of a failed TV series. You don't make, they don't make movies of Drive. They don't make movies of John Doe. They don't make movies of, they don't make movies of Stuff My Dad Says, right? William Shatner's show that isn't on TV anymore, lasted a year, if that. That you're never going to see a movie of that show. But they made a movie of another movie of the Firefly thing because of the fan reaction, because of the DVD sales. Now, I don't know if that's ever going to happen again, but it's at least happened once. And don't kid yourself, Fox made a ton of money on those DVDs, and they will keep making those DVDs for as long as they can because if they make money on it, and that's what it's all about. So what's up?
Now, was that kind of like what happened with Doctor Who, where it was gone for like about 10 years?
No, Doctor Who's an entirely different thing. Doctor Who, and I'm talking about sci-fi all day. You have no idea what you've done. Doctor Who is a show that's been on the air in Britain for like 30, 40 years. Been on TV forever, right? That show had been on almost continually from like 1965 all the way up to the original series went off the air in like 1997 or something like that. So we're talking about almost 40 years worth of TV, okay? And by the end of the run, it was pretty silly. If they'd been doing it for 30, 40 years, it was pretty bad. Even hardcore fans were like, this is not the show that I used to love. This show is dumb. The stories are stupid. The effects are bad. Why am I watching this show? And ratings just went through the floor. Because it had been around for 40 years, and it was the same old, it was stale, it was old, it was just bleh. And so what they did was they pulled it off the air and they gave it a rest. And the BBC didn't make it for like 5, 6, 7 years. And then back in 2004, 2005, they brought it back, and ever since then it's been like this amazing thing. I think because they gave it a rest, and because people said, and when they did come back, it was different.
Are they playing old episodes?
You can buy old episodes on DVD, but only the new episodes from 2005 and beyond are currently in reruns. So I got to move on. As much as I would love to talk about more sci-fi and stuff, I'm sure that I will. But I got to move on to actual stuff we need to talk about. So this all has to do, again, with TV ratings and the fact that they're collected electronically. Okay. That's the way that most TV ratings are collected in the country. What's up?
What if you watch like your TV show on the internet? Does that
That's a great question. Yeah. I think that the Nielsen folks, not necessarily Nielsen. The interesting thing about watching on the internet is I don't need to get a separate piece of hardware into your house to sort of intercept the TV signal. Mm-hmm. I can just call your ISP and say, hey, what sort of video gets streamed through to your clients? And again, assuming that there's a wall of anonymity, because I don't care, to be blunt, I don't care what your name is. I only care where you live and what you're watching, right? You'll see more and more companies are recognizing that there's been a change in behavior. Because I know people my age, people I went to college with, don't own TVs anymore. They own a DVD player, and they have a decent connection and a good monitor, so they just watch TV on their computer. You know, Hulu is your friend, right? Anything you want to see, look it up on Hulu, it's probably there. Kind of amazing, right? And that's just because the change in technology has made it possible to watch high-quality video on a relatively inexpensive computer now, right? And so, yes, the internet stuff does get counted into the ratings, but it gets counted in a different way. Okay, does that answer your question? All right, cool. So, yes, sir?
You mentioned they can tell what you're watching, when you're watching it, and how many people.
Yeah.
How do they do that one?
That's how that gets interesting, because everybody in your household, what they do is the Nielsen folks, when you're filling out the questionnaire to take part in the survey, they ask how many people live in your house. And you say, well, it's me and my wife, or whoever, and 2 kids. All right, so that's 4 people. So each person gets a number. So if you sit down to watch TV, you're supposed to put your number into the system. So that the bot, it doesn't know, like, instinctively. You have to tell it, I'm sitting down to watch TV now. Now, they have experimented with stuff that, like, the Wii and the Kinect use, image recognition, right? Because the Wii knows when you're moving around and doing stuff. Nielsen has tried to incorporate that into their stuff. So if you're just sitting on the couch, the Nielsen box goes, Steve has just sat down to watch TV. Because this silhouette looks like Steve. Hasn't quite worked out yet, but it's getting there. So, yeah, a little more creepy. But anyway, now TV watches you. So Nielsen collects their information almost exclusively electronically. Just to make things interesting, our friends over at Arbitron, which is the radio side of things, they do things a little bit differently. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to sort of spread things out a little bit over here. Arbitron uses what I like to call 3 P's. They use the phone. They still use paper. Very 18th century of them. And they use something called the PPM. Does Uncle Kernan still talk about the PPM?
Yep.
In first quarter? Okay. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that too. First off, let's talk about the phone. It's just like what it sounds like. People call you up on the phone. We all love that. And they say, hey, did you listen to the radio this morning? No, I didn't. Go away. I'm in the middle of dinner. But on the off chance that you say, yes, I did, they may ask you some questions. And again, the first question they ask is, do you work for a radio station in your market? Yes, I do. Thank you very much. Have a nice day. And that happened to me. When I lived up in Sheboygan, I got my first radio gig. I got called by Arbitron Actually, I think it was Nielsen. I got called by Nielsen, and they were asking me questions about TV. And the first thing they said was, do you work for a media outlet in your market? And I said, yes, as a matter of fact, I do. And they said, oh, sorry, gotta go. So it does happen. But they use the phone, just regular old phone survey, you know, the ones we love to ignore. They also still, for many, many markets, they still use what's called a paper diary. And if you ever wondered when you were in the middle of first quarter, why do I have to say the positioning statement about WNLD so often? Why do I have to do it? It's driving me crazy. Right? Not only do you have to identify yourself within 7 seconds of talk, that's a rule, but the reason why we say the positioning statement and the liner so often is because of the paper diary. The paper diary works like this. You get called, you get contacted by Arbitron, and they figure out if you fit their criteria for someone they want to get information from. And assuming that you jump through all their hoops and fit all their rules, then they'll mail you out a little paper booklet. And they'll say, do us a favor and keep track of what you listen to and when you listen to it. Sounds great. And in theory, you take your little paper booklet and you put it in your pocket or your purse or your bag or whatever, and you take it with you wherever you go, and you dutifully go, oh, wait a minute, I'm in the car. I should write down that I'm about to go to work and I'm listening to 97.1.
Do people actually do this?
There you go. You have hit on the problem. Some people do, absolutely. I'll let you know right now that my wife is an accountant and she loves to fill out surveys. She loves to fill out surveys. So she would take the little booklet with her and keep it by the speaker at work. And if she, you know, if she changes the radio station, she'll write it down. It's just the kind of person she is. Most people, though, don't do that. You're exactly right. Most people get something in the mail and they go, oh yeah, I got to do that. And they put it on the table where all the other important stuff goes. Right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Let's be honest. None of us go, oh, I should pay the phone bill right now. No, we all have a day or a week or whatever that we, you know, we sit down and go, okay, I'll pay the bills on the 25th of every month or whatever it is. Most of us have that kind of system. Or most of us go, wait until maybe the second or third notice and go, oh, crap, I got to pay the cell phone bill. But the point is the same. Usually you go, oh yeah, that thing that I said I would do, and you set it aside, you go do whatever's important. Right? Let's be honest. That's what happens. Well, what happens is that Arbitron and Nielsen both will keep track of ratings during a 2-week period. It's called sweeps. And we're in the middle of sweeps right now. That's why you're having, a show that you watch is having big things happen to the character. There's a big story arc. Or there's big character changes, like over on CSI, one of the characters just left last week, and somebody new is coming in, so they're hoping that kind of gets interest up, or look for somebody to die, or some huge thing to happen in the show, right? Like if anything bad happens to House, it happens in May, and it happens again in February. And the reason for that is because these are the times that they keep track of the ratings. They don't do it all year round. For some markets, they do. But for most media outlets, they do it a couple times a year. And those are called books. And the way you know if you get to keep your job or not is if your ratings are the same or better 2 books in a row. So 2 six-month periods in a row. With the Arbitron folks, they keep track of this stuff. But halfway through that 2-week period, they'll call you, or they'll send you a card, or they'll send you an email, and they'll say, hey, do you want your $70? Because if you do, you need to turn in this booklet, don't forget. And usually that gets people to go, oh man, I gotta fill out my thing. So they'll go and they'll dig it out of wherever the important stuff pile is, they'll go dig it out of the important stuff pile, and they'll open it, and they'll start to fill it out. And the natural human instinct is to go, all right, what do I do in the morning? Well, I drive to work, and I usually listen to 97.1. So I probably listen to 97.1 all week. That's why the positioning statements are there to beat you over the head. Okay? Because one of the best pieces of advice I ever got was from a PD that I worked for up north. He said, listen, it's not what people hear. It's what people think they hear. And so the reason why we use the positioning statement, particularly in radio, so often. And the reason why the bug is at the bottom of the screen when you're watching TV is so that you never forget you're watching Fox, you're watching CBS, you're listening to 95.5. By the way, did we mention you're listening to 95.5? Because this is 95.5. Don't know if you knew that. But you're on 95.5 right now. And also in between this song, and after this commercial, and after that commercial. And so what happens is the first there's an association that goes on in your brain. And you think, oh, was I listening to the radio in the morning? Yes, because I always listen to 95.5. Right? Or I always listen to 96.3, Today's Best Hits Without the Rap, WDVD. Right? That, and I bet you, if you have a habit like that, you can recite whatever their positioning statement is word for word, even though you don't work there. You don't have to say it every day, but you know it because it's creeped into your brain. It's soaked in like a sponge. Right? And so that's why the positioning statement is there, because we count the paper diary counts on not actual hard real-time data like the Nielsen folks do, but it counts on maybe the most amazing and yet unreliable thing in the universe, and that is the human memory. Okay? I don't know about you, but I don't remember what I had for breakfast on Monday, let alone what I listened to on the way into work. Mm-hmm. But I still wrote something down because I want my $70. Right? That's the game. And that's also the flaw in the system. And people in radio have been complaining about that for years, which actually brings us to the third thing on the tree, which is the PPM. And if Uncle Kernan has talked about this in first quarter, then I'm going to just kind of shine a little more light on it. The PPM, the personal people meter, is the holy grail of radio ratings. At least we thought it was. It's the thing we thought we wanted for years and years and years, because radio people, just like in the diary example, have been complaining, well, there's too many variables, because we don't know where the diaries go, we don't know if people fill them out accurately, we don't know if they're being truthful. So we need something that's impartial. We need something that just collects data that we can look at and know what's actually going on. Right? So the PPM is a little tiny, it looks like a garage door opener or an old school pager or something like that. And you put it on your belt or in your pocket or wherever. And it does essentially what the Nielsen box does, but it does it with radio. And just like the Nielsen box only starts keeping track after a certain amount of time, the PPM does the same thing. If you're listening to a station for more than 30 seconds, the clock starts to tick. And then it keeps track of things, okay? And that's how it gets its data. And so then that changes the game. And now, just like in TV, if I'm a PD, if I am the program director over at RIF, I can now look in real time, which is the creepy thing, I can look in real time and see, I just heard Drew and Mike do a break. How many people are listening to that break right now? I can look at the PPM numbers and watch them go up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down. Okay? And go ahead.
I was going to say, so someone's given a PPM? It's not like it's in the radio or anything?
No, someone's given a PPM. It's just you still have to take part in the survey because they still have to ask for your permission. Because it still is essentially, it's tell us about your life. And we still have, at least for a little while, we still have an expectation of privacy. because if it were in the radio, then if I were Insidious, if I were, 96.3, I would just go around and break everybody's radios. Oh, stuck on 96.3, how'd that happen? I don't know, right? So the PPM now can gather radio information electronically just the same way that the Nielsen box does. And that has changed the game quite a bit. It's changed the way we do radio. It's changed the way the programmers think about radio. And if you're a jock, it's changed the way that you perform on the air. Because now, shorter is better. Because we found that over time, the ratings tend to go down, but then they go back up. And it's any time the programming changes. We used to think that it was because people don't like to hear people talk, which is why you have a station like Doug FM that has no jocks, right? It's your iPod on shuffle is all that Doug FM is. And occasionally there's commercials in the middle, but you probably ignore those anyway. The difference is that Doug FM, because it doesn't actually have any live personnel, is actually a really cheap format to run. So it makes a little bit of money, and with that money that comes in from Doug FM, I can prop up my other stations that I run that have actual people on it. Right? Well, what we found over time is that it's not the fact that people talk that drives the numbers down. It's that something changed. And our natural impulse is, something changed, I'll listen to it, I'll evaluate it for a couple seconds, and then I'll decide, nope, don't like it, change. So I go from one song to another. If I don't like that song, change. I go from song to commercial. Don't like that commercial, change. Go from song to somebody talking. I don't care what they're saying, change. Right? But usually what happens is the same thing that happens when you watch TV. Something changes, you don't think you like it, you flip around, and you probably end up back where you started. Okay? And so the numbers tend to do this. They dip, and program directors freak out. They're like, oh my God, our numbers are going down. But if you zoom out and look over time, they go back up. And they sort of have their equilibrium. Now the difference is, if you do something that you told people, hey, this cool thing is coming up, you should totally listen. When I was learning how to do this for a living, the idea that you would ever give somebody a specific time that something was going to happen was absolutely ridiculous. Because what you were essentially saying is, and for years I heard Drew and Mike say, when they would go do a stop set, they'd say, we'll be back in four or less. Do you guys remember hearing that on the Riff? Mm-hmm. Or maybe you heard some version of it on another station. From a production standpoint, it used to drive me crazy, because I'm thinking, wait a minute, I just paid for a commercial, and you're telling me that I can ignore what you're about to do for the next 4 minutes. If I was an advertiser, I'd be pissed. Because I'd be like, hey, I just paid for you guys to put a commercial on, and you just told people when it was going to play, and when that stop set was going to be over, and the fact that then they're going to miss my commercial because you told them it was okay, because most people still listen to TV in their cars or when they're at work. And so if I hear Drew and Mike say, we'll be back in four or less, what am I going to do? I'm going to look at my clock, I'm going to do a little math in my head, and I go, okay, if I want to hear the rest of this show, I'll be back at 4:27. And so I'll flip around until 4:27 comes around. Now, the dirty little secret is, four or less is never four or less. Four or less is actually five. So you come back at 4 minutes, they're still playing a commercial. Right? You'll catch the tail end of that commercial. But because it's close enough to the time that you thought you needed to be back, you'll probably sit through the end of it. Mm-hmm. Right? But the other thing that they found is, if you say to somebody, we are giving away Red Wings tickets at 10:12, the numbers go up because people come back because they want the Red Wings tickets, but they want them at that time. So the PPM has actually made the impossible possible on radio, and that is appointment listening. We're used to appointment viewing on TV, right? Because in this country, programs start and end usually at a half hour or an hour. Okay? It doesn't work that way in other countries. Other countries, the show's over when it's over. You know, don't ever go watch TV over in England because it's just nuts. Because you never know when something's going to start. They always start at weird times. I'm like 12:42. Okay. And so we have this kind of regimented schedule, right? Everything starts at 0 or 30. Or if it's an hour-long show, it starts at the other 0. Right? And so we've got ourselves conditioned to that. And now radio with the PPM allows us to do the same thing. Okay? I've gone a little long here, so what I want to do is we're gonna go on break. When we come back, we'll talk about, now that we've figured out how to get the information, we'll talk about what to do with it, and we'll go on from there. So let's take a 15-minute break. I'll see you guys back up here at 12:15.